New Dissident Radio. Listen before it's illegal.
Hello and welcome to Ardent Atheist, where reason reigns supreme. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hello.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the intertubes, and from my face. You can find links to our guest's website, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, and our email at ardentatheist.com.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat moderated by Joe Swam, go to the Facebook page of Ardent Atheist, like our page, and join in. We might use your statements in the live broadcast, so join Joe there now.
And please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, and write a review. Help us get in the top 10. We only have a couple of rules on our show. Rule number one, guests may plug anything they want as long as they slip it in gently when no one's looking. And rule number two, if you're a listener who's ever been offended by anything, get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. This show has no restrictions on language or content, and certainly has nothing for you, you tent-sized cunt. You're listening to the second half of a two-part episode starring David Feldman, Frank Conniff, and Jimmy Dore. You know these guys from showbiz. And now, the exciting conclusion of AA Without a Higher Power.
I see beautiful things. I see...
Thank you.
Citizen Jimmy... I see perfection around me, and I think that when other people
this isn't my hair. This isn't my hair.
I think when people share perfection, they come together, and that is
I perfected share.
They go from the quotidian, the daily, to something ethereal and bigger than all of us. I think there's something bigger than all of us.
Chris Christie and the cock. Two punchlines in one at the same moment. God damn it, that was good.
He's a large man.
Surprisingly, Chris Christie's cock is not...
Not very big.
Not very big.
Got to tie
aren't
a string
you,
to it.
Hence, he's a Republican.
Are you fulfilled by the idea that... obviously, you're not, but I'm fulfilled by the idea...
Chris Christie is fulfilled by the idea of all-you-can-eat salad bar.
Now, you know what's the funny thing, though, Frank, is that Chris Christie is for the Defense of Marriage Act, but he's against what?
No, he's for the Defense of Marinara Act. He's a large man.
You set him up for
that's
that?
The point.
Jimmy, nice work. Nice work. Usually Frank works alone. That was really nice.
I hope.
And speaking of morality, the only same-sex union he ever approved of was the one between Ben and Jerry. He's a big person, is the point I'm making.
Now, when he became governor of New Jersey, didn't they change
the Yes, he had the name of New Jersey changed to the Olive Garden State. I mean,
He's a large man.
He's big. He's a big person.
He is large.
Yeah.
Could I get a list of your jokes to set you up, too? I need more...
See, I like jokes. People a lot like it. I know it's very hip in comedy. They're like, let's just do it. You know what? I like jokes. I like them. I always like panel. You know, and Albert Brooks, who I think we can all agree is the funniest guy in the world, second to David Feldman. But
What's your thought?
Continue.
When he would go on The Tonight Show with Johnny, he had prepared pieces.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't fuck around. He didn't wing it.
Right.
Okay, but back to you.
Are the kids winging it these days? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong. There was a time, I think there was a time when people were afraid of jokes, or especially to do them.
Jokes were uncool for a while.
Yeah, jokes were uncool, especially to do them in a setting that isn't a stage with a microphone. It was very uncool to do. Like in this, it would be weird.
Fortunately, I was out of work during this period.
I think the reason people don't like jokes is because they're stupid and they feel left out. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Hmm. But everybody gets it when I say them.
Well, no. If you've ever been in a crowd or remember when you were in school and you would tell a joke and then somebody would feel stupid because they didn't get it.
Yeah.
Usually it was at their expense.
Right. But, right. There, there are only a couple of Jews in my school. Didn't matter.
I didn't think you were going to pull that one out, man.
This is more fun than I thought it was going to be. This is more fun than it was.
Watching me and Dave argue?
Yeah, it was good. Well, it's good. Dave, as a true comedian, Dave is a contrarian. Even though he believes the same thing we all do, he finds a way to make it not the same.
He's an atheist who believes in a higher power.
So he has an angle.
Whatever it is, I'm against it.
Yes. Well, I despise
the religious right.
I know you. Do. I know you. Do.
I despise them.
You're as left wing as anyone I've ever met.
You know, it's one of the most confusing things in Christianity to me is that there's a lot of evangelical Christians who say Jesus died on the cross for our sins, and therefore we have to spend our entire existence worshiping him and being grateful to him.
You know,
for doing this. Okay, first of all, he knew he was going to heaven when he died, so it's not as big a deal like if we know we're going to die, and he came back from life. He came back to life 3 days later. And yet our entire existence should be based on gratitude for him for dying on the cross for us. So on the one hand, Jesus did this incredible thing. But on the other hand, he's being a total dick about it.
Right. He's only pretending.
Can I say that, you know, the let's take a moment and enjoy that joke.
It's like if I did something nice for you, and then all I did for the rest of my life was like, "Hey, what did you buy me something today? You remember that time, like I saved you, and you, what did you do?" For
well, that's
me
what
today?
You would
end up hating me.
My brother helped me movies. Never let me forget it.
Well, that's how you know Jesus was a Jew.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you think he feels about everybody wearing those crosses around their necks?
Yeah. Oh, thanks for reminding me of the worst fucking day of my life.
Right.
What? Oh, right. I thought you were going to... I literally was still in his material.
That's why I wear the wedding ring around my neck.
Okay, I've just seen perfection.
Nice. Bow down.
That was very nice. Frank,
I had something to say, and I can't remember what it was.
Smoke a little more. So here's the question. First of all, you're talking about the whole Jesus thing. It's not beautiful. That's one of the things I hate about. Go ahead.
I remember.
I'll
what
get back
it was.
To mine. I'll remember mine.
Okay. I remember what it was. Well, I saw that the topic in the email was that we were going to talk about going through like a 12-step program or getting sober without belief in a higher power or something like that.
Yeah,
so I thought it would only fitting I would show up a little buzzed.
You're not really buzzed. I'm joking.
So, but my – oh, damn it.
Go ahead.
If I fucking – oh.
You already forgot?
Yeah, I forgot it.
I'll start, and then you jump back in. And
Dave's not here, man.
The Jesus thing. I knew it'd fire you. I knew it'd get you going.
When he was talking about, I went through a depression, like a first major depression. I didn't know what it was, so it got really bad, and I wanted to kill myself and stuff. But I remember
that was in the first hour of this show.
But then I left Al's house.
Stay tuned. He's going to kill himself by the end of the show.
And I remember laying in a hotel room in the Quad Cities in Iowa. I was working a funny bone there. And I could,
we know why you're depressed. Go on.
No,
that must be what really suck is being a paraplegic in the Quad Cities. That would really make me feel like half a person.
Oh, fuck me.
What are the Quad Cities?
Yeah. So they're Davenport, Bettendorf.
Bettendorf, right.
Two other things.
Well, it's understandable that you felt, you know, Sylvia Plath was playing a funny bone when she killed herself.
Really?
Let me
what
just,
are the four cities in the Quad?
I only know two of them. But
have colleges? Is there an actual quad?
It's a quad. Yeah, it's a quad. It is a college town.
Yes, there
are
quad
cities are.
But can I just
go ahead?
So you're a quad in a quad.
Right.
I remember thinking to myself, laying in that hotel room, not being able to sleep, in horrible pain, going through this depression, didn't know what it was, didn't know what to do. And I remember thinking, boy, I wished I believed there was a God so I could tell him to go fuck himself.
Nice.
Him and his big fucking sacrifice on the cross. 3 days. Oh, it beat him up for 3 days. Mm-hmm. I've been going through this shit for 3 months, you motherfucker. And I would gladly fucking trade it in for 3 days of hell if I knew it was going to be over. Because this ain't going to be over. Fuck. And I just, I hated him. So I wanted to go, fuck you, Jesus, and fuck your sacrifice, because I'm having it worse than you ever had it.
And actually, the guy who booked you into that funny bone was Pontius Pilate.
Fuck, am I looking that up?
You know what? I, after hearing about the Quad Cities, I'm now an atheist, because these are... I'll tell you why. Because these were four cities by themselves. Mm-hmm. They were nothing. but they wanted to become part of the fabric of the universe, and they joined together, and there's still shit.
There's still nothing. Nothing.
Well, I'm glad that happened. Prevenza asked me to get you on the show and make you a real atheist. So,
I'm now an atheist because of the Quad Cities. Where are the Quad Cities?
They're in
Iowa.
They border Iowa and Illinois. It's sliced right down the side there.
And so, there's nothing. There's not
the nearest place is Chicago.
No reason to go there.
Yeah.
I mean, the Quad said, but Chicago's nice. If you've ever been in Chicago.
And two of the cities are in another state.
Yeah, two are one side, two are the other, I think. Or maybe one's one side and three are the other. It's something that's split weird. East Moline. Yeah, that's how pathetic it is.
I think it's Moline.
It's East Moline and Moline. That's exactly right. And Bettendorf and the other one you said. I keep
Davenport.
Hearing. Davenport, right. Which is the biggest part.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm learning a lot of shit I didn't care about.
That's what I was just thinking.
Have you ever... I remember feeling that. I remember wanting to...
Did you ever believe in God, Jimmy?
Yes, up until the time I was getting confirmed. And I was kind of sniffing it out then because they had changed the holy days of obligation. And if you're a Catholic and you don't go to church on the holy day of obligation, you'll go to hell, right? Because that's a mortal sin. But they changed them 1 year. They cut them from like 14 to holy days of obligation to 7. And I'm like, well, what about the people in hell who have been in hell for all those? That's kind of, and they didn't have a good. The kind of answers my parents and my teachers gave to me were the kind of answers that made you lose respect for your elders. And that's what happened. And then I remember I was getting confirmed, and my dad was a speaker at for church. And so he was the speaker at that ceremony when the bishop comes to confirm you. That's when you're supposed to accept the Holy Spirit. And so my dad took me backstage because he was the reader to meet the bishop first, you know. And so the bishop shows up, and my dad knelt down.
Oh, no.
In front of him.
You saw your dad's.
And kissed.
Yeah, his ring.
His ring.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it for me.
Yeah.
And then that's when
you thought your dad was gay?
Michael Corleone.
Right, right.
All those murders, then.
That's amazing. You really had a lot of respect for your dad at that point.
It
you?
Really blew me away, and I remember asking my dad. I go, "Dad, why would you do that?" That's
what did the ring look like?
Super Bowl.
Some piece of jewelry.
He said, "Son, some kids." Anyway, no, he. That was it. He just said that the guy who wasn't kissing his ring. He goes, "I was. There's a jewel in there. That's a holy jewel." And that you're supposed to kiss that jewel. And I'm like, he just happened. I'm in the eighth grade. I'm like, he just happens to wear it as a ring, Dad. And I go, okay, you know, it was just seemed so what the Pharisees, like he looked like a Pharisee.
Right, right.
It was like the things they told you what was wrong with everything. And then like, here we are. We're exactly what we claim to hate.
I think it's Feynman's dad who told him never to respect a uniform. Feynman has a big thing about this, and you can find it on the internet. They'll put it up on the wall.
That's why he always pushed right past doormen his whole life.
It's total disrespect.
And he'd
for guys
say, give me
hotel.
A fucking whopper.
How do you do it? How do you do it? Yeah, it was profound. It really affected Feynman a lot. It made him realize that they're just
men.
Is that
why he's
just
human beings. Post? Oh, you're not talking Feynman? About Howard Feynman.
No, Richard. Right? Richard Feynman. Oh, okay. I should have said Richard Feynman. I'm sorry, Frank.
No, yeah. I'm never far from a Howard Feynman reference.
I know. You're not. That's
it's absolutely true.
I think that's the hardest you ever made me laugh. It was about 4 years ago. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Tell the joke. Can you
no,
remember
no, no,
it?
I just remember you. No.
Constantly referencing Feynman. Yeah, that's moving. That's really powerful. And that's maybe one of my favorite stories of how someone became an atheist, actually.
Oh, that was
your
tough.
Motivation to cast off what I think of as the chains of religion was really righteous, really good.
Still makes me wince just to think, you know, just tell, oh, it's
Dad,
like a punch in the gut.
Why did you kneel down before that queen?
Can we agree then that the people who are listening should hate organized religion, should hate the religious right, but if they need a higher power to get them through their heroin addiction, that's not wrong, right?
It's not. Let me tell you something. No, it's not wrong. I'll tell you right now, I agree with that sentiment fundamentally. But it's sometimes not possible. That's the problem. This girl didn't write because she couldn't suspend disbelief and do that. It's actually, I misspoke. That's why she wrote. She can't suspend disbelief to do that. I'm sorry. That's what I mean. She wrote because she was having trouble finding her way through
AA and connecting with it completely. And I have a problem with AA because it makes believers out of people in order to release them from this addiction.
Well, I don't know if that makes maybe that's true. I mean, I the thing about AA, too, you got, and I'm like, you know.
I'll
like
say it's I light, said, Frank. I will say it's a very light approach
right,
to belief.
Right, and
don't
I,
get
and
me
I
wrong.
Have to, just saying first that, you know, those secret rooms that I'm not allowed to tell you about that I go to where I get free coffee have been a big help to me in my life. But another thing about AA, though, is that only like – I think the statistic is that only 1 in 3 people who go into it, it doesn't work for most people.
It's less than one in three.
Yeah, it's less than one in – it's. I heard 1 in 3.
Do you know the
three.
Percentage?
I don't know the exact percentage, but and I know from my own personal experience that a lot of people don't make it. And so it's a system that works for a lot of people, but it doesn't work for everybody.
Let me just explain the reality.
And that's part of it is just how powerful the disease is.
Statistics show that the failure of AA to help people stop their addiction, stop pursuing their addiction or partaking, is identical to people who simply choose to stop. It's literally identical. It's not slightly more less.
But they're different people, though.
What do you mean?
There's some people who can just choose to quit drinking, and then there's an identical number of people who need to go to AA to quit drinking.
Right. I mean, there are people who can do it through willpower, and part of the whole thing about AA is willpower has nothing to do with it. Willpower does not play any part in recovery in a 12-step program. It's you're surrendering your will. You're giving your will over to something. So that's a whole different. You know, there are people who are.
How do we do that study? That's you bring up a good point that I'd never thought of, because that statistic meant to me that people who have the ability to quit, go to AA and use that system to quit, had that percentage of people had everybody who had been successful in AA simply pursued alternative means, whether it be intrapersonal or some other system.
Other system that I'm guessing is similar, but maybe without the spiritual aspect.
Without the spiritual aspect.
Of AA.
Well, AA, I think, is...
You would take,
and AA is like a lot of self-help, a lot of therapy.
Right.
It's all kind of interconnected in terms of what you... the kind of systems that you follow to try to help yourself.
Right, and the reason I prefer the other one, I'm going to look into your...
What I'm saying is you have 10 people who've quit, and I'm an alcoholic. I've quit drinking and smoking dope.
Why?
Because I discovered...
Poor Jim is surrounded by people who don't get high.
It's such a bummer.
I get high.
Heather self-medicates.
You have 10 people... 5 of whom went to AA,
right.
5 of whom did it on their own.
Right, right, right.
But the 5 who did it on their own, the 5 who went to AA may not have been able to do it.
I see what you're saying. Had not thought of that, and I'm not even arguing.
I consider myself a person who could not have done it on his own.
Did you ever try on your own?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
I did.
Okay. So you weren't. Know? So that
and that's
one
part of
example.
Why I have, it goes back to what I said before, is that, you know, I got a lot of help, you know, from other people, obviously, but I also, like, can't help have this irrational feeling that there was some other force helping me.
Yeah. Well, see, the skeptic, I was going to speak to this earlier, please hold it, Dave. Whatever that is, the skeptic feels like you're robbing the individual, as a really, really effective person in charge of your own life. You're robbing yourself by handing it off to
somebody. As an individual, I wasn't an effective person in charge of my whole
life. I get you.
That was the whole point, is that as an individual, I was fucking everything up. And my own, just doing it on my own was just, or just using my own willpower. Come on, motherfucker, just be badass and stop taking drugs. I mean, that would have been great if I could have done that. But I always needed help, certainly in the form of other people who helped me,
community,
and then in just a sense of just being helped along by a force that beyond me that I can't understand,
which has nothing to do with you drinking a lot of coffee.
No, I actually don't drink a lot. I drink a lot of caffeine, but
Jimmy, how'd you quit doing drugs?
He exhaled.
He began again.
You know, I never had a problem with drugs. I escaped it. In my neighborhood growing up, a lot of guys were into coke. I never did. I was one of those guys who looked down his nose at guys who smoked pot. Yet I used to drink a half a gallon of gin. And not, you know, I mean, I was one of those guys, right? Oh, you're smoking pot. You're a drug addict. And then I got to be about 28 years old, and I couldn't drink like that anymore. And I still, because I was in nightclubs all the time because I'm doing comedy, right? Most people stop going to nightclubs when they're about 25. And but I'm there every night, so I couldn't do that. And then my friend gave me a pot cookie, and I was like, I'll take a bite. And it was one of the funnest times I ever had. I was like, what the fuck was I thinking all these years, right? And then I started the pot train. And
I'd rather date someone who smokes pot than someone who drinks. Because I have a friend who was very, very violent, and he used to drink a lot. And he would just go to clubs all the time and just beat people
violent,
up. And
yeah, violent people are great when they get drunk.
Right. Well, he was like, I'm so sick of getting put in jail. I want to stop this. So he's like, I just decided to quit alcohol altogether, quit drinking beer. I smoke pot now, and my beer belly is gone, and I look great, and I feel great, and I'm smiling.
He's got a nacho belly.
He's got a nacho belly, yeah.
A joint in the morning, a joint in the afternoon, and a sensible meal at night.
There you go. That's all you need.
Now, David, you quit using, and you didn't go to AA.
But I've been in therapy since I was 17. So I'm an alcoholic. I quit drinking and smoking dope and doing pills in 1988.
How old were you?
I would have been pushing 30.
Okay.
And I was also pushing pills. Okay. So I was supporting it. But here's the thing. Again, I will call myself an atheist. I hate the religious right. I think most organized religions are homophobia delivery systems. They have destroyed our country. I think the religious right has destroyed our country. That being said, when you go to AA and they say surrender to a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the serenity prayer? God,
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Did you learn this at these coffee gatherings?
Now, I heard it through mutual.
What badges did you get?
Okay, so
did you get any badges, like Boy Scout badges?
I don't need no stinking badges.
So this woman who has a heroin addiction and she doesn't believe in God.
Yes.
The serenity to accept the things that I cannot change.
Right.
You get serenity knowing that there are some things that
you're powerless over.
And also, part of that is I would say to her, don't try to will yourself into believing in God. Don't fight that. That's where you're at now. You don't believe in God, but you want to stay off drugs. So focus on that, and like I said before, focus on a higher idea of your life, you know, like you said, the future is your higher, the life that you want to have, and your vision of that is your higher power. Without there having to be any God or anything involved in it.
And there are out there actually online the 12 secular steps, and someone's taken them and rewritten them a few times in different ways so that people can take what they want from it and use it, and it's at sossobriety.org, and you can look at the 12 secular steps. And
it's known as, they call it the 12 steps with a gimmick.
Oh, you gotta have a gimmick.
Yeah. But accepting your powerlessness is one of the core tenets of organized religion. Islam.
I don't like it.
Islam means surrender.
Yep.
I wish they would. But
surrender is very important to recovery, and that's why AA is so great in France. But I'm so glad.
God damn it. Oh, wonderful.
And the coffee, it's espresso.
Exactly. They have the best coffee.
Yeah.
And you call up in France, and you call up people who you've harmed and make them apologize to you.
Oh, fucking.
But
great.
Surrendering to a higher power is accepting your powerlessness.
I understand that.
And saying I'm weak and there are things that are stronger than I am.
The drugs.
I don't have to surrender to a higher power to admit to myself and you that I have weaknesses. I don't need the higher power aspect. That's not required for me to go. I have weaknesses.
But
there are things I'm not good at.
But there are things that are more powerful than you are.
You could probably take me in a fair fist fight.
What about an unfair one?
No, I'd kick his ass.
David, have you ever taken mushrooms?
No.
Oh, well,
let's not do this.
You know, speaking of powerlessness, though, you just said that you could be beat up by a Jew. I mean, that's not powerlessness.
Yeah, anyway. That's surrender right there. Huh?
Well, I'm half black. Maybe and I half thought Jewish, I would get a laugh. So
you're half black and half Jewish.
She's a Jigga Jew.
I'm a Jigga Jew.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Don't give me that look. I don't celebrate, but I got to eat all the meals.
So you take it in the ass, but still no head.
No. Opposite way around.
Wait a minute.
Sorry.
Okay.
So your mother is...
My mother was Jewish.
And your father's...
But she wasn't raised...
My father was an atheist.
But she wasn't raised in the Jewish
traditional
community of tradition.
Well, because we didn't have a community. We had...
I'll do the Woody Allen joke. Her mom was a reformed Jew.
She was a Jew for Jesus.
Really reformed. She was a Nazi.
Second time I've heard that joke.
I just did that same joke.
It's a great joke. It's one of the best. Woody Allen.
Now, I have a theory.
Okay.
I believe in America, Jewish women, white Jewish women, invented miscegenation. That's my theory.
I'm sorry. I'm from Camden. You have to define that. Camden, New Jersey.
Yeah,
sorry.
What miscegenation is.
Oh, what is miscegenation? Yeah. It's a country that borders South Africa.
And, now, come on.
No, miscegenation, it's the mixing of the races. Yeah. And I believe that in the 50s, this is one of my crazy theories, that white Jewish women living in New York City slept with black men.
And well, they were well hung. That.
Nobody else was. No. So where'd your mother grow up?
New Orleans.
New Orleans. Okay.
Yeah, how they met was they went to Memphis State University and they were like in the same class or something like that. And then they moved to New Jersey with the Volunteers of America. And so I wasn't around any of my Jewish family or anything. I was basically away from everyone. I'm an only child too. So she really tried hard to get me involved. She asked me if I wanted to go to Hebrew school. Do I want to go to Christian school? I picked public. I should have took one of the.
Now, what about the tension between the blacks and the Jews? Because there is a real there's this love and hate.
Dude, I was dealing with the tension between the blacks and me just because I was biracial at the time. You know, the religion had nothing to do with it.
I tried to talk my
The first church we went to was an all-black church, and my mom was the only white-head, red-headed, blue-eyed lady in the whole place. Hungarian woman, and
she's a living example of my racist grandma being right. My grandma said the races should not mix because the children won't fit in anywhere. They don't fit.
But they're beautiful.
And they're fucking
gorgeous. Always gorgeous.
My grandma was right about the experience that Heather and others like her, Rain, has talked about this.
But everybody has that experience. Not your specific experience.
Not to that degree, but we all kind of have that, don't we?
No matter what your race or whatever, when you're a kid, it's going to suck probably.
Yeah. Well, and then we went
gonna be really hard.
From the opposite spectrum. I went to the white, conservative, Presbyterian, I guess, it was called the Jesus Center. Let us put it that way. Mm. And it was in, a cookie cutter fabricated home.
Your mom was, what a Jew for Jesus is.
That's what her mom was.
Yeah.
Somebody who doesn't have any money.
Yes. that was us. And yet she still tithed as much as she could.
Yeah, she was a Jew for Jesus.
Yeah, she was a Jew for Jesus.
But what do you think? Why do you think, because I have theories about this, why do you think there's a tension in America between blacks and Jews?
Well, the thing is I don't know anything about that because I didn't witness that. That's not.
What do you think?
I mean,
that's
I would just have to read about that because I didn't have that.
I think it all started.
It was just black and white in my neighborhood.
A lot of it had to do with the conflict between Red Fox and his writers on Saturday.
tell that story. That's such a great.
Story. Do you know the story of him on Sanford and Son is that he, when he was at the height of his power as the star of the show, he said, get all these white writers out of here. I want nothing but black writers in here. So they brought in a whole room full of black writers. Day one of the table read, the script was horrible. No one was laughing. And Red Fox said, get me my Jews back. I want my Jews back.
That's a true story.
Yeah. It's an urban legend. But
I like that one. Do you know the one about him coming out on stage?
Oh, yeah, that's another one.
I should defer to one of you two to tell it. You luminaries.
Is it true?
Do you think?
Yeah, it's true because they were a union band.
Yeah.
What happened? I don't know what happened.
The story is. Do you want to tell it, Frank?
If you want, it's he came out. It was a late show in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Red Fox came out. Ladies and gentlemen, Red Fox, the band in the pit plate. That da 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 Red Fox comes out. There's like five people in the audience. Red Fox goes, fuck all you white people. Walks off stage. The band plays. That's one of the great show business urban legends.
Oh man. That's I heard he said, I ain't doing no show for five white motherfuckers, and walked off, which is a horrible impression.
Billy Crystal claims he was there and saw it. But
really?
That's his story.
Is that his claim to fame?
Yeah. What hotel only gets five people into a show? I mean, Jesus Christ, they got more people going.
The one I'm playing.
Well, this was in the 60s and he was black.
No, it was in the 70s when after Sanford.
Yeah,
it was.
Oh, yeah, it would have been after Sanford.
But, you know. Yeah. They booked, can I say, they booked too many shows for that. I'm sure the first show
was
full.
It's Vegas, man. Late shows can go shitty. Who knows?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how true this is, but my uncle told me a story about these two Jewish guys. They were walking down the street and they saw this sign that said, "Come in and convert to Catholicism, get $100."
So I would assume not both of them went in.
Right,
David, your instincts are correct.
One would stand back just to find out if it was okay.
Right, so one guy goes, I'll go check it out, see what happens. So he goes inside, and about an hour later he comes out, and his friend goes, hey, did you get the $100? And he goes, is that all you people think about?
That's
one of my favorites.
That's awesome, Joe.
So that was, I have a story too then, so I contribute.
Let's hear. Oh, that was the story.
That was the story.
And now is your mommy still alive?
Nope, she died.
No.
Okay. The early Jew death.
Way to go, Dave.
And did you know your grandparents on the Jewish side?
No. They were first generation American too.
Right. And were they upset that?
Yeah. What kind of problems?
So basically, when my mom and dad got married, they got married in a small court and were warned that if they did go through with the marriage, the KKK would come after them. So they left town that night.
Wow.
My grandparents, my grandfather had died before I was born, but my grandmother told my mom that she would never speak to her again because she married a black man. And this happened. She didn't talk to her.
And she was Jewish.
Yeah. Mm. And she didn't talk to her until about a couple days after I was born. Then she called up and was like, I want to see my grandbaby.
Oh.
So my mom and my dad let her in the family, but they used to fight. My mom, my grandmom, and my dad used to argue in the car about driving. She was a backstreet hip-hop driver. And I would sit there as a little kid watching them, her berate my dad. My mom screaming and my dad going, just shut up.
You know, Rain, they made him put the chauffeur hat on and everything.
Yeah.
Rain's mother is Jewish.
Yeah. She's talked about being in the middle and not knowing who she was and all that.
I love Rain. She's amazing. Yeah, she's been a tremendous support to me. Without me even going to her first, she's just come to me and been like, sister, my sister, you know.
Yeah, the tension between blacks and Jews.
Yeah, I'm curious about
this.
Yeah,
I'm curious because
there are a lot of
Jews.
I would think they'd relate.
My theory is that Jews are cheap and then blacks are criminal. Right.
Blacks are cheap.
It's a fair guess.
But that's one thing. Could you paint it in a broad stroke?
Well, I think the reason – I think that Jews see themselves as black people.
Yeah.
They were slaves, so they
– Slaves with tiny cocks.
yum, yum, yum. So they have – they feel like they're brothers to black people.
Yeah.
But they don't get that the skin color
– they call them nigger and they don't understand why I get yelled at.
They don't – the Jews don't accept that the skin color is much harder to get past than the religious beliefs.
And than the nose?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a long tradition of progressive liberalism in Judaism, so black people are horrified when they discover that there are some Jews who are racist because they feel disappointed and lied to discover that a religion that's really progressive is capable of producing your grandmother.
But most blacks... Are we calling them that today? I don't know what the current is.
Most blacks, I'll take that.
Yeah. Are Christian in this country.
African American. That's another, right.
African American.
So that's, I mean, isn't that enough? I mean, and those who aren't are Muslim generally.
Right.
I mean, that
that's
tends
a good
to be,
point.
Can, yeah. you know?
You know, can I just say, and I don't know if this will make sense, but So yesterday I was at the Cheesecake Factory with my wife, and there was a booth next to us. There was four Jewish ladies eating, and the waiter come over, and he said, ladies, is anything okay? And
wow.
Yo, you have a whole other career ahead of you. Forget the politics.
There has been, in Jew-Black relations, there has been progress, but a study just came out that said that not a single black person has seen the movie Yentl.
Because they were too busy talking through it. My favorite experience was seeing What's Love Got to Do with It with an all-black audience. That was did you ever see that movie?
I Can Turn It Turn, What's Love Got to Do.
And I had heard about black people talking in movies. It's an art form.
It really is. It's not just a stereotype for no reason. It exists. It's incredible.
I'm sitting here with Frank Conniff from Mystery Science Theater.
That's what I was about to say.
But you know what? There, you know, that reminded me of what you said, that there's now a, and I was shocked by this. There's a whole network now of a cable network devoted to domestic abuse. Ike Turner Classic Movies.
All the movies are in black and blue. Exactly. Were you going to go there?
No. I was waiting for your that tag.
Did you have that tag?
No.
Now he does.
Now I do.
I believe the tag goes to the premise creator, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. I didn't want to step on his.
That was great.
There's a scene near the end, and this is, I think, the hardest I had laughed that year, where Tina is kicking Ike in the limo after years of abuse. She's trying to fight back.
And she's all fucked up and bloody and all that.
And he's winning. And the guy behind me says, there they go again. as though she's partly responsible for some of this.
If you haven't done it, if you live in an area that has a particular theater that caters to black movie filmgoers, you have to go once in a while. It really is hilarious. It's not just a joke.
Sounds a little racist to be laughing at their culture.
have you been to a movie with an all black?
One thing that I always remember. I don't think it's as funny as yours, but I remember I saw in Times Square in 1979. I saw the movie Alien. You know, when it opened and Times Square back then was a lot different than it is now. It was very urban, very, you know.
Much better.
Much better, actually, yes. Mm-hmm. And there was a scene at the end, or near the end, where Sigourney Weaver is in her underwear, and you see, like, her from the front, and this guy, this black guy yells out, yo, let's see some ass. And so she turns around, and then he goes, what kind of shit is that?
Yeah, I can't top either.
You know, I don't understand why you guys are all laughing. I mean, this is my life we're talking about. I grew up in this. I would go to the movie theaters in fear of getting my ass kicked for telling people to shh. And I had a friend, poor friend, he used to do that. He was like, I shush people at movies. I shush people. I'm like, you can get killed, brother. Get killed.
What is that about? I mean, because Frank has made a fortune.
I know.
Talking back in movies.
It's fun.
Well, you've dated some black guys. Did they behave that way when you went out to movies?
Oh, I had my last black boyfriend.
Or did they have enough money to go to
would
movies?
Read a book in the movie theater.
I don't know.
I think a lot of it is if I can generalize, it seems
it's funnier.
They react. So in other words, like at a Def Comedy Jam or whatever, like when somebody does well, they really like. I always envied watching Def Comedy Jam comics because I never killed like that.
Yeah, they jump up
and
down.
They jump up and they go crazy. And I mean, it seems like
it's a cultural thing. Probably, yeah.
I just figured it out. David wanted to know, and now I can tell you. I can tell you right now, because when a Jew goes to a theater, they've paid money to see that fucking movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when that Negro interrupts, you got a fucking problem, man.
Well, this is their night out.
Now you're into my pocketbook. That's where the rift is.
I didn't hear a single thing Tieve said. Also, and this ties it all into the atheist, I think a lot of it started in the church, too, right?
Yeah.
The call and response,
yeah.
Which is also where a lot of, you know, where jazz and gospel music and blues all came out of the church.
So the I think the honest answer to why black people tend to do that is when you've been oppressed,
mm-hmm.
and it all started with the speakeasies. It all started with the I don't know what year the black folks would go into these bars and they would dance and they would do their own thing, and there was a fusion going on of the dances that they that they brought over from Africa when they came here, and they were just completely out of their minds with joy because they were fucking slaves, you know what I mean? And so to emote that way was really logical when you've been beat.
You know what? You know what? A lot of people don't know is
I think that's probably the root of all this.
A lot of easy listening elevator music started in New Orleans whorehouses. People don't realize that.
Really?
I knew that.
You're kidding me.
David did know it.
I knew that.
Did Jimmy just get in?
That explains it.
I thought it was tranny bars.
Well, we're learning a lot about each other.
You know, I don't have that experience. I've never I don't go to the movies with minorities, but
you said your wife is a Mexican.
Oh, well, not for
you real. Don't take her to the movies.
Most people think she's Italian. So she could pass for
you know, but in terms of movies, I think what's uniting black, whites, Jews, everybody is that nobody wants to go see We Bought a Zoo.
I don't know this movie. We Bought a Zoo?
It's advertised everywhere. Have you not driven by and seen it everywhere? Yeah,
yeah. That's a real. But I did go to see the bold, fresh Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck tour that was simulcasted into the theaters.
Are you joking?
No, I'm not joking.
This really happened?
He did go.
And
right.
They were showing over at Burbank, and it was funny. You can't. I found out you couldn't yell. Like, people were. I would yell out something, but you couldn't yell out, like, anything. I tried to see how far I could push it, you know, like I'd be like, that's right, it's the Jews, you know, and stuff like that. And you could get away with a lot of shit there. And nobody turned around, was like, hey, watch it. Or, you know what I mean? That guy's giving it to the blacks. You know, you could say a lot. Queers. You could say queer all day long. So I had that experience, which is kind of.
I completely missed this. What's going on?
So Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck did a tour where they would just come out and they would each do a half hour of just nothing.
Live.
Yes.
Okay.
But then they simulcasted it into theaters live.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it was expensive. I snuck in. I bought a ticket to a different movie and then snuck in to see it.
Really?
Yes.
You bought a ticket to the Rush Limbaugh movie.
But yeah.
Well, thanks for proving David right that we have no fucking morals. Appreciate that.
You were Rush Limbaugh versus Joe Frazier.
No, it was Rush Limbaugh versus Joe Franklin, actually.
Those were the original pay-per-views, right?
Yeah, boxing was the original pay-per-view, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what is this they're doing in these things? This.
So they just come out and they do like a – you know, Glenn Beck actually does a little comedy. He makes fun of Nancy Pelosi in a funny way. Not really funny, but every once in a while he can turn a phrase.
Well, he's really preachy lately. Mormonism. Is it Mormonism?
He comes out, it's where he gets to wear a polo and a pair of jeans and some sneakers.
Right.
And it's just funny. It's really weird to be around those people. Like, you're sitting there and you're steps away from Hollywood, yet the entire theater looks like it's Little Missouri.
Was it filled?
It was filled. Of course it was.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, honest to God, the people, they didn't look just like not Hollywood. They looked like. They didn't belong in California.
Yeah, we live in a bit of a bubble where that's concerned here. Do you ever get that feeling?
I'm from Chicago, and these people didn't look like they would live in a city.
Yeah, I'm from Kansas City. Where'd you grow up, David?
I grew up in New Jersey.
And
Camden,
Frank?
New Jersey.
What exit?
New York City.
You grew up in Camden?
Really?
Yeah, I had a Jewish mother and a black father.
Stop.
No.
Bang.
I live across the street, honestly, from Vivid Entertainment.
Really?
Yeah.
You were lucky.
I went today to borrow a cup of jizz.
Oh, you should be able to pay that back in no time. Yeah, that's great. All right, well, listen.
A cup of jizz.
Right.
I want. got Jimmy good. All right, Jim.
He'll be okay.
David, I can't thank you enough for coming.
This was great.
Show. It was really a fun time.
God bless you.
No, no, God. Thank you so much. I want to wrap up by talking a little about this. You are an atheist in that you seem not to believe in any theism.
I believe I've been sober.
He's still laughing.
I know. I'll turn his mic down while I enjoy
I've been sober since 1988. I did it through therapy and a belief in a higher power.
Right.
And whatever your belief is about religion, shut your fucking mouth. Keep it out of my country. Yeah. Keep it out of government. And I think it is. I think there is evil in the world, and I think there is good. I think religion is evil. I think all organized religion is evil, and they have destroyed America. So I will call myself an atheist until we become a nation of intellectuals again.
Nice. Do you think Google might do that for us? And I'm not kidding. I really think that the fact that here's my thought. Kids now have – when I was a kid, we had the encyclopedia, school, and parents. That's
library.
All we had. I couldn't cross-reference. They all fucking agreed on the bullshit they were feeding us. So when you can't cross-reference, you don't think critically. It doesn't occur to you someone might be wrong. And just today I was talking to my mom. I was telling her about this. She goes, that's absolutely right. If I had a source to go to when my dad told me a bunch of bullshit, I could go look up whether or not what he said was true. Mm-hmm. And kids do that. They want to know.
Well, so I think, excuse me for one second, I think what Google is going to do, but it won't be our generation.
No.
The next step in our evolution as Americans will go from arguing politics to discussing it, to people actually saying, I didn't know that.
Right.
Which well, they Google, are. The religion, though, they have a presence on the web, though.
No, let me just say.
The Pope has a Twitter feed called Shit My God Says.
Oh, it's the greatest.
Oh, man.
I'm looking this one up because I want to find that one.
David, that's wishful thinking, I think, because that's assuming that people will someday agree on the facts, which if you've noticed, the conservative in this country has developed a separate society, a news
a separate
bubble.
World away from facts.
Away from facts. They don't ever have to watch.
Paul Krugman in the New York Times today had an article that we live in the post-facts. That he was talking about Mitt Romney just says all this shit about Obama that's just absolutely not true whatsoever. And no, he doesn't really get busted on it.
No.
Yeah. We live in a post-fact society.
So that's where you can Google something. You can Google evolution and someone's still going to disagree with
you. Well, let me tell you something. Here's my thought on this.
That happened to me, but that's what I wanted to say. My dad, you were talking about how your parents, I was at home, and this is when it was still a dial-up. I had my laptop, and my dad was talking about, we were talking about evolution, and my sister's there, and she's going, it's a theory, and I wasn't that smart. And I go, Dad, would you explain it? He goes, it is a theory. And so I got out my laptop, and I plugged it in, and I had to read it to him, the difference between what he thinks a theory is and what a scientific theory was. But I could because
when was
of the
this?
Internet.
How long ago was this?
This is probably 7-8 years ago.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. That's what's going on. That's my point is this. When I was a kid, when my mom was a kid, when you were a kid, all of us, we didn't have the ability to cross-reference. It didn't occur to us to go find out if there's another version of something. It doesn't even have to be fucking right, the version, you know? Everybody complains that Wikipedia is not accurate. It's more than accurate. It's really close to accurate. It's not perfection.
You're right.
But it's really close to accurate. And so when you go to these various sources, some will be stronger than others. Some will make the right argument. And what's beautiful is I've always thought parents need to teach children how to think critically, how to question. Well, guess what? The internet's going to do that. And the reason is because kids have the internet in their fucking hand, in their pocket.
I see it with my kids. Last night we were on the internet and my son said, I wouldn't fuck that. So, yes, I agree with you.
It is. And it's the same device they use to get laid. That's another point. When you've got the same – if I could have gotten laid with the Encyclopedia Britannica, I would know everything. I could tell you every kind of hair that grows on every fucking spider's legs. But that's the difference. That's what we have now. Kids are – the generation that's coming up now has the information –
whether it's true or not, they have the information to go glean that, to find that out for themselves.
They're going to be getting laid a lot more?
A lot fucking more. You kidding me? Craigslist? If we had Craigslist, you and I'd be HIV positive right now.
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Well, because we'd have met.
How sure? Are you HIV positive?
I like that you're being so positive about
No,
so
I can't.
Now, if you're HIV positive, you fuck a guy who's also HIV.
Does it cancel?
Yeah, I think
no,
so.
No, it doesn't. I know it doesn't. My girlfriend, Lainey, who I broke up with recently, is HIV positive, so I'm kind of an expert on this. There are different strains.
I was making a joke.
Oh.
Hello.
Oh, but
I
I'm
thought you were serious.
He wasn't serious.
Two positives make a negative.
All I
two
know
negatives
is
make a positive.
In 1985, I fucked Roy Cohn without a condom.
I figured it was Feynman.
Howard Feynman. He wrote about it for magazine.
Yeah, you. But some people think that HIV positive people can have sex with two, right? And right. They still have to protect if they have different strains.
Really, there's different strains.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
HIV. I thought that was the strain HIV, right?
No. The HIV is the reason HIV has been so effective is because it is
mutating. Constantly mutating.
It's evolving
good
constantly.
Publicist.
It's
doesn't get government benefits.
Actually, Lainey had better health care than I did because she was HIV positive. The Ryan White Act.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
Well,
amazing.
HIV don't need no union.
It's not as bad as it was before now. At least it's not considered as bad because there's more health care, medical
Well, it's not even terminal anymore.
It's
now
not
it's,
terminal anymore.
They're still not letting some kid go to a summer camp. Because of it,
did you hear about the guy that was working in a doctor's office?
A dentist's office.
Dentist's office.
So how does that joke go?
The joke goes that they sprayed the doorknobs with Lysol and wouldn't let him touch them.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. They treated it was. It's the most egregious example of HIV discrimination I've ever read.
Not that that doctor's office was backwards, but they wouldn't let him touch the leeches either.
Right.
What did he do? Me. What was his job there?
He was just a I think it was a receptionist or a technician.
No,
like,
he was a tech. He was a technician of some sort.
They use gloves. Yeah. You know, they're not in people's faces.
Wait a minute. Obviously, he was a nurse.
Nice.
Gay guy.
No.
So, I don't know. I'm not sure what he was.
How many different strains of HIV are there?
I don't know the answer to that.
So much for his expertise, huh?
No, the encyclopedia doesn't get me laid. I didn't remember that. I only remember what gets me laid.
So it's like hepatitis A, hepatitis B, Frank. Like,
well, I got my parents were thrilled when I got hepatitis B because it was the best grade I ever got.
Can we just do this all night? Just keep lobbing him.
I have a Spanish doctor, and I said, "Do I have hepatitis?" And he said, "Sí."
Dr. Mel Blanc,
And I said, "Well, what kind of hepatitis do I have?" He said, "Sí." I said, "No, I know I have hepatitis." Hi.
Oh, he said, "I don't know." No, he's on third. Very funny. Very funny man. Thank you for coming in. Thank you
fun.
For
I
arguing
do
with me.
Come to our show. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I had a great time. It was really fun.
Our blood got boiling at the beginning, and that was fun.
Yeah.
But I realized you've discussed this more than I have. And I guess you're right. It is semantics. I just don't see the purpose of getting so upset about it.
Okay, hour three.
I don't see the point of. I can understand hating organized religion. I just don't see what it matters if there is a God or there isn't.
Organized religion is mostly what I rail against.
Yeah.
I don't spend much time at all declaring that there's no God. I really don't. I spend most of my efforts and energy. But second to that, I spend a lot of time talking about the harm that belief does to us and illustrating that.
Well, I grew up Catholic, and now when I look back, I feel that God did bless me because he made me not that attractive to older men.
To older men. I just don't think that I think it's important to dismiss. My mom has dismissed it. You know, she was religious her whole life, and she's in her 60s now, and at around 62 or 63, she started dismissing it. And she had this really amazing moment where it was a come to meeting when a kid was kidnapped from the front yard of the house she lived in. By this pedophile guy, and the kid is mildly substandard. And
what was the kid wearing?
you remember?
Daisy Dukes,
right?
And so the kid has substandard intelligence.
Yeah,
so he's from Kansas.
yes, it's a Christian. But they went on this hunt because they knew this kid had been kidnapped. It's a 20-year-old or 21-year-old, but the brain power of like a 12-year-old.
So
right?
he wasn't a kid. She wasn't kid.
Right, right.
She was retard-napped.
Right. She was tard-napped.
Oh, man.
And my mom.
It's been a tard-napping.
And my mom called me.
You got to look out for a 50-year-old man.
And a really hot retard. My mom called me really upset, and said, you all right, David?
It's our Christmas show.
Because she couldn't pray. She found herself driving, going, oh God, please, please, God, please, let's find her, please help us. And then she realized, what am I doing? It's not helpful.
Did they find her?
They found her.
She came back.
Thank God.
She had been mildly fucked around with sexually.
And then he dropped her off at home.
Cured her mental retardation.
Maybe that's what he thought he was doing.
She became a rose scholar.
He's a genius.
It turns out all she needed was a little.
Give him a Nobel Peace Prize.
A little bit of fingering from a guy.
You know, can I just
in a Walmart parking lot.
And I'm the guy who believes in God, and I said that.
Right, yeah. Right.
You know, I'm not a militant feminist myself, but I have fucked a few. Turns out that's all they really needed. Really nice girls. Really nice girls.
Just to get laid. That'll turn them right around, put them in the kitchen where they belong.
Yes.
Is that what happened to your Mexican wife?
That's my friend Rich
Brown's
joke.
Was she a Sandinista?
Where is Rich Brown?
That's Rich Brown's joke. I have to give credit.
He? Always
Where
credit
is he?
The guys.
He moved to Santa Monica, David, and I've seen him twice in fucking 2 years.
Is he performing? What's he doing?
He writes with Peter Farrelly, lives there, you know, so he never has to leave.
That's a good gig, I guess,
mm-hmm.
Right? All right, you're all out of here. Thank you very much,
Thank
David.
You.
Thank you very much, Frank Conniff. I didn't mean to run so long, but we're going to turn it into a two-part
show. Can we plug our shows?
Let's plug it.
Plug anything you want, as long as blah, blah, blah.
The David Feldman Comedy Podcast, starring Frank Conniff and Eddie Pepitone.
Yes.
Pepitone's been on a couple times. You know what I want Pepitone to? I want Pepitone to just halfway through a show, he'll drive over with me and set tight. But halfway through a show, he just flies the door open and he walks in and goes, "I was listening to the show. It started off pretty well, but then you started with this," and then he just rails us for 10 minutes and then turns and walks out and says, "Get your shit together." And just closes the door and storms out.
Well,
walks in and heckles the show.
We have a great, great radio show and podcast that is truly irreverent and sacrilegious, almost as good as the Jimmy Dore show.
Oh. Damn right.
Oh, my God. Yes, the Jimmy
Dore. Jimmy Dore has his own show, too. It's awesome.
Yes, starring Frank Conniff, coincidentally.
I'm a happy participant in both of these.
And,
all right.
If you like the funny news shows, that's what it is. It's a very funny show.
Well, I can't thank you all enough. Frank, do you have anything to plug?
Cinematic Titanic, which is the live Mystery Science Theater show, will be in at the Keswick Theater just outside of Philadelphia, New Year's Eve. And you can go to cinematictitanic.com for that info. Although that might have happened already by the time this airs. But
all right.
And you should follow Frank on Twitter.
Yeah, you should.
Follow me on – but cinematictitanic.com will give you information about all our upcoming –
Frank Conniff, two N's, two F's.
Two N's, two F's.
And are they rerunning your old show, the MST 3000?
Well, it's available. Shout Factory puts them out on DVD. And people are watching them all the time.
Yeah.
They continue to put out box sets of old episodes.
Absolutely wonderful show, obviously. We all love that show. Thank you very much, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my guests, David Feldman, Frank Conniff, and Jimmy Dore. I also want to thank my co-host, Heather Henderson, and New Dissident Radio. Tune in next week, where our guest will be Michael Ornstein.
And other people.
We will be talking about how right we are. I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of the Aristocrats, Eric Wilson. And special thanks to our Facebook publicist, Cameron Winters, and our Wall of Reason moderator, Joe Swam.
You've been listening to Ardent Atheist on New Dissident Radio. Ardent Atheist is a product of natural selection.
New Dissident Radio. On the interweb.